This is Akashvani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on India's role in evolving geopolitics. The participants are Skandaranjan Tayal, former ambassador, and Sushma Ramachandran, economic analyst. Moderator is Manas Pratim Bhuyan, journalist.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi paid a two-day visit to Moscow on July 8 and 9. That was watched closely in various geographies due to geopolitical reasons, obviously. The Prime Minister held extensive discussions with Russian President Vladimir Putin during a private meeting at the Russian leader's residence on Monday evening. And that was followed by talks at the 22nd India-Russia summit the next day. The main focus of the talks was an extensive economic agenda. The two sides set a target of $100 billion in annual trade by 2030 and decided to develop a robust bilateral payment settlement mechanism using national currencies, which is being seen as very, very significant. Ambassador Tayal, how do you see the target of $100 billion in bilateral trade by 2030? We have a ballooning trade deficit in favor of Russia. Is it not a matter of concern? How do you think India should address this trade deficit? And how the increase in the overall bilateral trade volume will help us?
The growing trade deficit is definitely a matter of concern. Till about 2 years, 3 years back, India-Russia trade was $10 billion, $15 billion per year. But after India started buying discounted crude from Russia, last 3 years or so after the Ukraine war, then now the trade last year was $65 billion. And $60 billion is export from Russia to India. Mostly it is oil and petrochemicals and some fertilizers, etc. And less than $5 billion from India to Russia. Now, of course, India will need to buy the crude from, if not from Russia, from some other country. And there also the payment issue comes up and India pays in foreign exchange. But with Russia, perhaps there is some possibility to increase India's exports to Russia. And another way which is being explored, and perhaps there can be some decision in the future, that many oil exporting countries which have major reserves like Saudi Arabia or United Arab Emirates, they have sovereign wealth funds and they invest in different countries. So one suggestion which has been going around in academic circles and policy circles is that money which India needs to pay for importing Russian crude could be held in rupees in India itself and invested in India in infrastructure and in different sectors, both in private sector and in public sector. And that could be, we all remember that in the 60s and 70s and 80s, till the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was a rupee-ruble trade agreement. And whatever exports and imports were there between Soviet Union and India at that time, the settlement was done in rupees and rubles without involving foreign exchange like dollars or SDRs, etc. So that is one possibility. Other, of course, is that how does India increase its exports to Russia? And there have been a lot of efforts and Chennai-Vladivostok corridor, India has been trying to invest, Indian companies have also been trying to invest in the Russian Far East, in the Vladivostok conference, Prime Minister had gone in 2021. So there are some new avenues, new directions, new areas to be explored if this trade deficit can be bridged. And if the trade touches $100 billion by 2030, then it is likely that trade deficit could be, at the present rate, if we extrapolate, could be almost $90 billion export from Russia and only 10 from India. So it is a matter of concern.
Ms. Ramachandran, how do you see the overall economic agenda of Prime Minister Modi and President Putin in the talks? I would also like to draw your attention to the decision by both the sides to have a very robust bilateral payment settlement mechanism using national currencies. It is being seen as very, very significant. So India has been facing difficulties in making payments to Russia for various procurements in view of restrictions on Russian banks under SWIFT payment mechanism. So we all know that SWIFT is a global financial system that allows the smooth and rapid transfer of money across borders. So what are the measures that will require to make payments in national currencies by India and Russia?
I think the broad contours of the trade issues between India and Russia have been outlined by Ambassador Tayal. I think the payment system, as he pointed out in the 60s and 70s, we had a system by which we were able to make payments in rupees. However, the trade between the two countries declined tremendously over this period from the 80s till now. One of the reasons obviously was that both countries, Soviet Union turned into Russia and India became liberalized, and both countries tended to source their requirements, not only of consumer goods, but also heavy machinery from Western countries. The trade between Russia and Western countries and India and Western countries became far more liberalized. Therefore, the rupee system of trade and the level of trade reduced. What was left largely was defense purchases, because India has over the years, over the decades, been making a large amount of defense acquisitions from Russia. Now, coming to the present situation, as Ambassador Tayal pointed out, till about 2 years ago, the level of trade was very low. But we continued to have a system of rupee payment in terms of defense, to some extent, for defense purchases. And as a result, there was an accumulation of funds which had in the Indian banks of about $7 to $8 billion. And in fact, the Russian authorities were somewhat concerned about this issue, and they had raised it with the Indian authorities last year. However, this situation has now been resolved, because it was after a series of negotiations, it was recognized that Russia could now start taking the kind of things that they were purchasing from the West, and which they were no longer able to purchase due to Western sanctions. There were many goods that they could purchase from India. So that amount which was accumulated in Indian banks of rupees was brought down over the course of the past year by purchases not only of exports of Indian goods to Russia, but also the Russian authorities decided to make investments in the infrastructure sector as well as in the equity markets. Therefore, the problem that had been faced of utilizing rupee funds was resolved. And it was only after that they were able to come to this agreement of mutual settlement, which you pointed out is in the joint statement, that we can now operate in each other's currencies. Because going forward, we will have a greater bilateral investments, with India seeking to make investments in the upstream exploration areas of Russia's Far East, with Russia seeking to make investments in India because, as I pointed out, because of the Western sanctions, they are seeking to source a large amount of heavy machinery and equipment from this country. So this is the broad way in which the settlement issue, the settlement of dealing with national currencies, is likely to be dealt with in the future.
Ambassador Tayal, if we go to the joint statement released by India and Russia after the talks between the two leaders, we have seen a number of decisions actually came out of the talks. A number of very significant decisions to broad-base the trade basket, to expand the trade and economic engagement between India and Russia, which is very significant. So how do you see the outcomes flowing out of the talks between Prime Minister Modi and President Putin in the context of the current geopolitical scenario?
In the context of the current geopolitical scenario, of course, the India has been walking a rather difficult path, but I would say successfully. Prime Minister Modi clearly told Russia in his public statements about death and destruction without naming the countries. And I am sure in the private talks also, he would have raised the issues like Ukraine, etc. But my own sense is that those things are really between Russia and NATO, or Russia and United States. And India has its own position, its own national interests, and its own approach, which is based on principles. So geostrategic or position remains the same, that India is a close friend both of United States and Russia. India is a close friend of European Union countries, and it is also very sympathetic to the troubles being faced by Ukraine. So India's well-established position of the last couple of years after February 2022, it has been sort of restated in another way by this talk. But geo-economy, if we look at, then India is looking at this partnership in a more future-oriented way. And if we look at that program 2030, some contours of which are available, it is very much an approach of India and Russia how to take this economic partnership to a geo-economic partnership level. But one, of course, for India is very, very important is the proposal for a migration and mobility partnership agreement, because the population in Russia is declining. There will be need for human power, manpower, and in India, skilled manpower, whether it is old age care, whether it is software, agriculture, it is available. And India certainly does not want our manpower to go there and get enticed into dangerous occupations like some of them were forced to join the Russian army. So there should be a very legal, open, transparent way of mobility of people both ways. That is one. Then, of course, this transport connectivity, which is proposed between Chennai and Vladivostok, and it is very future-oriented because the way climate change is happening, weather is warming, the Arctic Circle passage, the path may become open, northern route may become open, Arctic route, after a few years, for all the year navigation of cargo and transport from Vladivostok towards Europe. And India being there as a partner of Russia will have huge advantages looking at the future. International North-South Corridor is another very important route which India has been promoting, supporting, but because of sanctions against Iran, it has not really become fully operational. And its full potential has not been realized. So all these projects are there and they are future oriented. And India and Russia are looking at this, our special and privileged strategic partnership, not on a short term basis, but on a long term mutual benefit basis.
Ms. Ramachandran, after talks between Prime Minister Modi and Russian President Vladimir Putin, Foreign Secretary Vinay Quatra said a significant component of the talks was devoted on how the partnership between the two countries can give fillip to Make in India and other manufacturing partnerships. Quatra said PM Modi spoke about the need to broad-base the overall trade basket and call for greater market access for Indian goods in Russia, both in agricultural and industrial sectors. So is it significant? How do you see this India's push for greater market access in Russia?
It is certainly deeply significant because we have in the past, as I pointed out, the trade between and the bilateral investment relations between India and Russia had been dwindling in recent years. And in fact, it's a very strange thing that the Ukraine conflict is certainly something that we deplore. We want peace in all countries. But the fallout has been rather unexpected, I would say. The fallout has been that Russia has, because of Western sanctions, has had to look to other countries. And India is not the only one they are looking at. They're looking at China also. They're looking at other countries. But India is a long-standing partner of Russia. And they are looking at India to source a large amount of the kind of products and heavy equipment, heavy machinery, ships, railway wagons, things that they might have been sourcing from other Western countries. And coming, of course, to Make in India, they would naturally prefer, would like to make substantial investments in the infrastructure sector here. There are talks of investments being made in certain shipyards. There are talks of investments being made in the railway sector for the Vande Bharat wagons. So these are areas where Russia is obviously very much interested in. Also, we cannot forget the defense sector, because it is in the defense area that India has been concerned about the paucity of spare parts. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that we have over the decades been acquiring a lot of defense equipment from Russia. The equipment remains, but the spare parts have been a problem. So now the issue of setting up projects within this country to manufacture the components and the accessories is being talked about as part of these discussions. So the relationship, the economic relationship between India and Russia is likely to deepen with greater investments, not just of Russia into India, but also India into Russia. You're going to have a lot of private corporates seeking to utilize the opportunities that are now available in the Russian market.
Ambassador Dahal, Prime Minister Modi and President Putin also underlined the need to move forward on the long-discussed India-Eurasian Economic Union Trade and Goods Agreement. So both sides already held one round of discussions. Mm-hmm. So how do you see this move in the context of, again, whatever we are witnessing geopolitically?
Yes, this FTA with the Eurasian Economic Union, which is really led by Russia, with membership of Belarusia and some East European countries like Kazakhstan, this is also a future-oriented relationship. And how the trade between India and the members of the Eurasian Economic Union could increase. But ultimately, the same question arises that what can India export to these countries given large distances, because the freight cost is high, and exports from China to these countries become much cheaper, both because of the lower cost of production in China, because they have hidden subsidies and nobody has been able to really pull up China for that, but everybody is very conscious. Even Europe is talking about overcapacity in China. So China is able to supply a lot of goods to these countries, whether it is Russia or members of East, you know, Central Asia, etc., at a cheap rate, both because it subsidizes its production and because of the lower freight cost as compared to these goods coming from India. So there are issues which will remain, which will not go away. And I see more possibility in pharmaceuticals and lighter goods which can be transported by air. And the whole new area of digital economy which will come up and bound to become huge. And just like India was able to export a lot of software and computer-enabled services to the United States and West Europe and create a whole new market with a lot of balance in favor of India, I think one could look at that kind of possibilities. So for instance, the ticketing of Aeroflot and could be done in India. Their accounts could be done in India. So just exactly what Indian companies are doing for the Western corporate sector, particularly the American corporate sector, their civil sector, their cities, their banks, perhaps something similar could be done for these sectors in Russia as well as other countries of Eurasian Economic Union. And that would bring a lot of advantage to India.
Ms. Ramachandran, energy cooperation has been a key component of India-Russia special and privileged strategic partnership. Our procurement of crude oil from Russia has witnessed a very significant upswing in the last 1.5 years. So how do you see the overall energy cooperation in the fossil fuel domain between the two countries going forward?
Well, it's something again which has shot up in recent times. Our imports of oil from Russia were probably just about 1% or 2% of our total purchases from abroad. And the bulk of our purchases were in the form of long-term contracts from suppliers in the Gulf countries, in West Asia, whether it was Saudi Arabia, UAE, Kuwait, these countries. And also, of course, we had been diversifying in terms of buying crude oil from the U.S., because of the sanctions on Iran, we had to curtail our imports from Iran. So we were also buying the cheaper crude. It's cheaper crude, but the freight cost is higher when you're getting it from the U.S. So that was the situation before the Ukraine war. But once the Ukraine war erupted, prices shot up to around $100, $130 per barrel. And it was at that time that India would have faced a very difficult situation, but Russia came forward to offer crude at much cheaper prices. Russia was also facing sanctions at the time, though there were not any formal sanctions on purchase of oil, but Europe was trying to curtail its exports. So these purchases of oil have now gone up. We are now buying as much as 40 to 40% of our total crude from Russia. And it has enabled us to keep our oil import bill within manageable limits. Going forward, it seems that at least in the short run and the medium term, this situation is likely to continue. At the same time, India has been able to get favorable prices from other countries as well. And I think this has been said by various petroleum ministers that it's not that India is deliberately trying to violate Western sanctions by buying from Russia. India is merely working in its own self-interest as any country would do. We are trying to buy the cheapest crude that is available. So if Iraq sends us the cheapest crude or America sends us the cheapest crude, we would buy that because that is in our self-interest. So there are other countries like Iraq, for instance, has been offering crude at fairly cheap prices. But as I said, right now we are continuing to buy from Russia. And this looks like the situation in the foreseeable future. It looks like it's going to continue. But energy cooperation is not just in the area of crude oil. One more thing, as in the area of crude oil, the other thing that I think perhaps I had mentioned earlier is that India would be interested in making investments in upstream oil projects in Russia's Far East, where, you know, they have their reserves of oil, and Indian oil companies would like to go in there and make investments in oil production and exploration. But as I said, energy cooperation is not just in the area of crude oil. It is also in the area of nuclear energy. And this particular visit has highlighted the fact that nuclear energy is back on the table. We have already nuclear energy plants which have been set up with Russian technical assistance. And the statement talks about the enhancement of these facilities as well as proposals for new nuclear plants. So that's also an area where India and Russia are likely to move in the area of energy.
Mr. Tyal, very quickly, I would like to just draw your attention to the resolve by India and Russia to intensify trade and investment cooperation to the Far East and Arctic zone of Russian Federation. You briefly mentioned that. Would you just explain the significance of this initiative? Will it complement the trade basket between India and Russia overall?
Very much so, because Russia's Far East has immense potential. It has all the minerals, all the resources. It is very sparsely populated, and Russia is looking for foreign investment to develop that area. And perhaps the Chinese are coming in large numbers, and perhaps Russia is a little wary of a lot of Chinese coming and settling down there. So that gives India an opportunity. And some parts of Far East are also fit for agriculture. And it is possible that huge farms can be established with Indian farmers. There have been several very large conferences in Vladivostok and hosted by Russia, and once India was the partner, and Prime Minister Modi was there, or many of our ministers were there. But unfortunately, our private sector has not really risen to the challenge and has not taken the initiative to invest there. There is immense potential, there are possibilities, but government of India, Indian private sector, Russian private sector and Russian government have to work together to identify some major projects, some major investments which could be of mutual benefit. There is a lot of interaction and I am sure soon there will be tangible results.
Ms. Ramachandran, I would like to draw your attention to Prime Minister Modi's visit to Austria, the first by an Indian Prime Minister in over four decades. So, in Austria, Prime Minister Modi held extensive talks with Austrian Chancellor Nehammer, and the two leaders identified a stronger economic and technology partnership, holding that it would be of strategic objective and interest to both the countries. In this context, they welcomed the convening of the first ever high-level bilateral business forum with the participation of the CEOs of several companies in Vienna during the visit. So how do you see the scope of India-Austria economic and trade engagement expanding?
We have to remember that Austrian companies, Austrian industry is largely in the area of high technology. And this is where India and Austria can have really a great deal of meaningful cooperation. I believe this year itself, there's something called a startup bridge, which was launched. And under there was a visit of the Austrian labor minister here, and there was a reciprocal visit of a group of startup owners from India to Austria. So these are the areas, you know, in artificial intelligence, in innovation, where we can have, and in the area of digital technology, digital financial architecture, where we can have a lot of meaningful cooperation. Also, of course, I believe there is also a migration and mobility agreement between the two countries, and that has just been operationalized. And here also, if we are able to get skilled people from this country to go to Austria to work in their high-tech companies, I think that would be beneficial. That would be a mutually beneficial arrangement. So skill development is, of course, another area. Again, when you talk in terms of not just high technology, but sustainable technology, I believe the joint statement talks about cooperation in, you know, clean water, clean transport, water, renewable energy. So these are the areas, sustainable technologies, high-tech technologies, where India and Austria have a mutual interest. India, of course, has been trying to meet its targets under the Paris Agreement, trying to reduce its carbon emissions. And it has also launched the very well-known National Hydrogen Mission for green hydrogen. Austria also apparently has some kind of hydrogen, green hydrogen strategy. This is, again, a high-tech area where the two countries can collaborate. It's not just environment, it's high technology, both coming together. So I think these are the critical areas where India and Austria can really build a deeper collaboration for the long term.
Mr. Tyal, last question. In fact, what, according to you, are the key takeaways from Prime Minister Modi's visit to Austria?
The joint communique says very specifically that it will be future-oriented bilateral sustainable economy and technology partnership. And as Prime said, that really one is looking at the future, whether it is infrastructure, renewable energy, e-commerce. So India-Austria economic and trade partnership, which was perhaps on the back burner for many years, will come up front. And it will be focusing perhaps on the startups and startup bridge and the new innovation in startup ecosystems, because India also has a very big and large and growing and thriving startup system. Again, Austria is short of population, so in the startups, the backup support, the manpower can come from India, just as it has gone in the United States, etc. So this will come on the front of the radar after Prime Minister Modi's visit. That is perhaps the biggest takeaway. Austria was on the kind of back burner. It was not really on the radar screen of Indian companies, Indian software engineers, startup people. But perhaps now it will be very much on their radars.
Ambassador Tyal, Ms. Ramachandran, thank you so very much for giving a detailed perspective on Prime Minister Narendra Modi's visit to Russia and Austria. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Manish.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on India's role in evolving geopolitics. The participants were Skandranjan Tyal, former ambassador, and Sushma Ramachandran, economic analyst. Moderator was Manas Pratim Bhuyan, journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashwani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.